Okay, hope everybody are enjoying their lunch. Wishing you all a happy Hanukkah, a good Chodesh, and a good week, good Voch, yeah, why not? So, Tanakh today is dedicated by Serena David Kashitsky, in memory of Riva Kashitsky, Zichrona Livracha. May her Neshama benefit from the learning of our community. Lunch is dedicated by Nathan Kirsch, in honor of the Rosh Midrash, Sganim, and the Vrechim for Baracha and Atzlacha, wishing him a lot of Baracha and Atzlacha. So, I wanted to discuss today in our Jews and non-Jews session of Tanakh in a Day, something which is unfortunate, but unfortunately this happens a lot, that sometimes we have wars or military operations in Gaza or other places, and our enemies use innocent civilians as human shields. And in the process of battle, so unfortunately this thing happens a lot, and they always like to highlight this, that we unfortunately also hurt innocent civilians, innocent bystanders, bystanders, right? And the question is, what is the halakhically right thing to do? If we know that our enemies are hiding behind innocent people, children, hospitals, can we attack them knowing that they're hiding behind them and they might use it and then attack us from these points? This is actually a halakha question, but very interestingly, the rabbis, the poskim, actually address it primarily from Tanakh sources. I brought here in the beginning a headline from one of the Israeli newspapers, Ynet, and they introduce the concept of which is called Hakesh Bagag, which is knocking on the roof. That when the IDF want to bomb a building, so, and they know that they have their innocent people, so they would do what's called knock on the roof. They text the people who are inside. They make a phone call. If that doesn't help, so they even shoot small bombs that can't make damage, but they make the point that they're going to now take down the building in order for the innocent people to run away. When they do that, so the non-innocent people are running away, and they take advantage of that. So the question is this thing something that we actually have to do, both in a moral perspective and also in a halakhic perspective? I brought here a few psukim in Sefer Dvarim that tells us how we go to battle, how we engage battle. Ki tikrav el ir lilachem alea, v'karat alea l'shalom. When you draw near to a city to fight against it, then proclaim peace to it, because we Jews want to have peace. That's what we daven every single day. Sim shalom. We want to have peace. So beforehand, we ask for peace. We also see that we have to also make sure not to harm innocent trees and not to ruin trees that are used for fruit. So if we don't want to ruin trees, so kal vachomer, we don't want to ruin and harm innocent people. The question is, if indeed our enemies are hiding behind innocent people, what should we do? So I actually did bring here a few halachic sources, but later on we're going to see primarily sources from the Tanakh that actually will tell us what is the right thing to do. So let's start with a halachic background. In source number one, I brought the words of the Shulchan Aruch, that he introduces the concept of rodef, which means literally a person who is chasing another person in order to kill him. The easy example will be Reuven is chasing Shimon in order to kill Shimon. So what does the third person, Levi or Yehuda, what does he do in this case to Reuven when he sees Reuven chasing Shimon to kill him? So says the Shulchan Aruch, a person which is chasing his friend in order to kill him and was warned not to do so, even if he is under the age of mitzvot, all of Israel are commanded to save him by disabling the rodef. And if they can't save him by that, they should kill the rodef, although he hadn't killed yet. So if we see Reuven chasing Shimon, and he wants us to kill Shimon, we warn him, we try to disable him, it's called lehatzil be'echad me'evarav, saving by shooting to the legs or something similar. But if that does not work, we're entitled and we're obligated to kill Reuven in order to save Shimon. That is the idea of roidef. Does this apply in our case as well? In the case of the innocent people, are they also considered to be rodef? Those who are terrorists are for sure Rodfim. They're for sure chasing to harm us and to kill us. But those who are just innocent people who live there, are they considered to be Rodef? So there is a very, very big chiddush in the Rambam that certain rabbis wanted to learn from there that yes, even the innocent people might be considered to be Rodef. Even a person who's not actively chasing a person, but only passively doing so, he's also considered to be a Rodef. Where do we see that? Because the Rambam says, in Hilchot Chovel Mazik, he says the following in source number 2, when a ship is about to sink because it is heavily loaded, and one person stands up and makes it lighter by jettisoning some of its cargo, he is not liable. The person who throws away the heavy articles that are on the ship, he doesn't have to pay for it. For the cargo is considered like a rodef, who is pursuing them to kill the passengers. So says the Rambam, we have this idea of a passive rodef. Rodef is not only a person who's chasing one other in order to kill him, we also have a passive rodef. If we have cargo which is too heavy, it's not a person, it's not a human being, it's not chasing anyone in order to harm him, but the fact that he's there, standing there with the cargo, and he's heavy, and he's bringing the ship down, that turns the cargo, although he's not a human being, it turns him into a rodef. And because of that, we are obligated to throw away the cargo, and the person who throws it away doesn't have to pay for it. So we learn from here the concept of a rodef, who is a rodef, even though he's not actively pursuing someone, but even if he's just passively staying there, he's considered to be a rodef. This is true regarding cargo, and also regarding animals that are too heavy. Yes, Professor?
Well, I'm thinking of example number 1. He mentions it's a friend.
Why does it have to be a friend?
Why do you think that's mentioned? It seems superfluous.
It's interesting. I think it adds an additional chiddush that even if it's your friend, you have to do so. Even if you feel close to this person, you have to do, you're obligated to wipe this person out in order to save the other person. So I think there is an additional chiddush. But anyways, we learn from the Rambam that we have an idea of a rodef. Even if he's not actively chasing someone, the person could still be considered to be a rodef. Rabbis used this Rambam in order to answer a very, very difficult halakhic question that hopefully will never be relevant again. And this is a question that comes from the Holocaust. There is a response book called Megei HaHariga, composed by Rav Shimon Efrati, and he brings questions that came up in the Holocaust. A terrible, terrible story. And he says, a person who hears this question, only if you hear this question, your hair is going to stand. What happened? That once, in a hiding, in a bunker, there was a group of Jews hiding from the Nazis, from the enemy soldiers. And they were hiding there in order for them not to find them. And then suddenly, among those who were hiding, there was a baby. And the baby burst into tears and started to cry. And there was no way to keep this baby silent. And they knew that if the enemies are going to hear the baby, so this is going to expose them, and then they'll be in danger. What to do? And then he says that there was a question, that person came, took a pillow, and covered the mouth of the child. Rachmana Litzlan, once the enemies went by, he took off the pillow, but the child wasn't alive anymore. And the question was, did he do the right thing? Again, hopefully this will never be halacha lemaise. It was in the past, but hopefully it will never be halacha lemaise again. And the person who did so, what did he do? Halacha did the right thing. And Reb Chaim Kanievsky, in source number 4, he was asked this question in a book called Mishnat Pikuach Nefesh. This was also the conclusion of the previous book, Megei Hariga, and he said that yes, it was the person who did so was allowed to do so because of the Rambam that I just mentioned. That the Rambam says that even cargo could be considered to be a rodef. Even a donkey could be considered a rodef, even though he's doing it without any bechira, without any choice. But since he is passively putting these people in danger, so you could throw away the cargo, you could throw away the donkey, and rachmana litzlan, you could also quiet down the baby. Shelo nada, it's a terrible, terrible story. Yeah? Why?
Okay. Second of all, if you take a case of like tossing a person overboard, It's a question of whether you have to repay monetary damages, not whether you're allowed to actually murder people.
No, so usually a person cannot throw away his friend's cargo, so he was obligated to do so, and that's why he doesn't have to pay for it. In general, also for saving people, if you throw away something, you have to pay for it, usually. Okay. But here, he's not liable. So, yes, it's terrible. So we see that according to this, even in passive cases of Rodef, he is considered to be a Rodef. So because of that, Rav Shaul Israeli, he was before the Rosh Yeshiva of Merkaz Harav, and a famous dayan in Israel. His face is actually in the hallways of this school. And he discussed a case that was once in Israel. It was in the 50s. It's called Peulot Kivya. I'll just go in a second. It's called Peulot Kivya. That back in the 50s, so there was what's called Peulot Tagmul. That it was a military operation that its purpose was actually revenge. Without any really a military purpose other than revenge. And he said that he entered a certain village and they killed, I think, around 60, innocent civilians. Was it okay to do so? If it would happen today, it would for sure be frowned upon at least, but it would cause a lot of noise. And he said back in the day that since they were supporting those since the people of this village were supporting the mechablim, our enemies who did piguim, so because of that, it could be that also the rest of the people are considered to be at least passive rodfim, which will allow us to harm them as well. Again, terrible things that hopefully won't be halacha lemaisa.
Is that the same halacha as if at a difficult birth? You choose the mother instead of the baby?
Yes, definitely. That is one of the sources of Rodef. It's a Mishnah, a Halot, and a Gorin Sanhedrin, Ein Bet, but in the Chinami. Sorry. He was asking, is the concept of Rodef the same reason why in childbirth, if the child, the embryo, when he's still inside the mother, he is putting the mother in danger, so that's why halakhically we prefer the mother as opposed to the child, because he's considered to be a Rodef at that time. Yes. Sorry. Okay, so this is the halachic background why that some people allow to harm the innocent civilians, because they said that they could be considered to be as passive odfim. If our enemies are shooting rockets from schools of children, so they're using the school as a shield, maybe they could be considered as passive odfim, and that is a halachic reason why to allow it. Nevertheless, many rabbis weren't compelled with this halachic reason, saying that it is a bit of a stretch, because even a donkey is a chiddush, even cargo is a chiddush, and in the case of the cargo and the donkey, so the cargo and donkey are really killing the passengers of the ship. They're bringing the ship down. So he says, but in our case, when they're used as shields, it's a bit of a stretch to also then consider them as rodfim. So at least, Rabbi Weiss, I know, he wasn't really compelled by these pieces of evidence, and he did not consider the innocent people of Gaza or wherever as rodfim, and he said that we have to find other reasons to allow it to harm maybe the innocent people in order to save the Jewish population of Israel. So he says that we have to find sources from Tanakh. So today is Tanakh in a day, and it's very special, it's very unique, because Tanakh usually is not a halachic book, which will instruct us to do things halacha lemaisa. Rabbi Shmuel says that we could learn these halachos from Tanakh, because we have no other source. He brings in other reasons as well, but he wants to learn these things from the Tanakh. So he brings the case of Shimon and Levi in the town of Shechem. This is in source number 6. I'll read the English translation. The famous story that was in the Parsha portion of just 2 weeks ago. On the third day, when they were in pain, the residents of the town of Shechem, Yaakov's two sons, Shimon and Levi, the brothers of Dinah, each took his sword and they came upon the unsuspecting city and killed every male. As we all know, Shechem, he raped and took Dinah in captive, and the brothers told them that they had to circumcise themselves, the entire town of Shechem, and nevertheless, Shimon Levi came and attacked the town and killed every male. They killed Hamor and his son Shechem by the edge of the sword, and they took Dinah from Shechem's house and left. And all their wealth and their little ones and their wives, they took captive and looted, and all that was in the houses. Yaakov said to Shimon and Levi, "You have caused me trouble. making me repugnant to those who dwell in the land, the Canaanites and the Perizzites, and I am but few men. If they gather upon me and strike me, I and my house will be destroyed." They responded, "Shimon Levi, shall he make our sister into a whore?" So we see that Shimon Levi attacked the residents of the town of Shechem and Hamor, and they were rebuked by Yaakov. The question is, were they right to do this thing? When they came and killed the innocent people of the town, were they right to do so? So Rashar Hirsch, in source number 7, Rashi Shimon Follow Hirsch, so he actually says they were wrong to do so. It was wrong for them to do so. And that's why Yaakov indeed rebukes them and criticizes them. As he says in source number 7, "Ata matchila hagnut, ve'ein bedatenu lechapot aleha." Yaakov is criticizing them and rebuking them, and we cannot cover for them. It's very clear that they seem to do the wrong thing. "Ilu hargu et Shechem v'chamor, v'day haya hadin imahem." If they only killed Shechem and his son Chamor, and the father Chamor, so in that case, they were right to do so. It's fine. "Achem lo chasu al anashim chasrei magen, hamesurim beideihem belo koach." But they showed no mercy for the defenseless residents of the town. That they were residents of the town, and they had nothing to do about it. They were forced to live there. They couldn't do anything. "Gdola mezo, hem shadedu," and it's even worse. They plundered the town. "Uvedech klal pakdut al anshei ha'ir et avon adoneihem." They punished the entire city because of the sin of their master. "Lekach lo hayta kol hatzdaka." There is no justification, says Rashar Hirsch, to do so. I believe also his face is on the walls of the school. "Lefichach gam go'er beim Yaakov achartem oti." And that's why Yaakov is rebuking them and he's criticizing them. Yeah? That's, so according to Rashar Hirsch, yes. It's a very good question. We'll see in a moment that actually the Maharal says that they were right to do so. Yes, we'll see that in a moment. But Rashar Hirsch, he says that yes, this is indeed criticism and this is indeed rebuke. This was the wrong thing to do. He says, other than that, that was the wrong thing to do. It wasn't wise because we're so small. We're only one family. And now we have here two nations around us, the Perizi and the Kanani. You're not putting us in danger. So even if you were right, it was the wrong thing to do. So some explained it was the right thing to do. Sorry? And they did. What? Sorry?
What if they did put us in danger?
What if they did?
Yeah.
That's what he said. Ah, who? The innocent people? We have to save ourselves.
So
in that case, they're not innocent. So in that case, for sure, for sure could do that.
Could be.
Rashar Hirsch concludes, "Achem irchiku lechet, kasher hargu tzedikim ba'avon reshaim takifim." They gone too far, Shimon and Levi, that they attacked the innocent people, and they killed tzedikim, he calls them, righteous people, because of the sins of the wicked among them. So we see that according to Rashar Hirsch, it was wrong to hurt the innocent civilian population in order to wipe out also the enemies. That is according to Rashar Hirsch. However, Maharal, in source number 8, seems to think differently. He doesn't immediately rebuke and criticize Shimon Levi. He asks a question. He says, "Im Shechem chata, kol ha'ir machatu laharog." I understand why Shechem and Chamor were guilty of the things that they have done. But why to kill the entire city? And he does not criticize them. He brings answers. He says the first person to ask this question was actually the Rambam. He asks this question, and he actually gives an answer in Hilchos Melachim. The Rambam says, why is it that Shimon and Levi, why did they kill the entire town of Shechem? Because the reason is, because they also were guilty in something. Of what? Dibnei Noach mitzuvim al hadinim. One of the 7 commandments of the non-Jews is to have a court system, is to have a police, is to have a normal society. That's one of the mitzvot of Shem Yisrael Bnei Noach. You have to make sure that those who do bad things will be punished, and make sure that they will be punished, and they won't do it again. He says the fact that the people of the town of Shechem and Chamor didn't do anything and didn't put Shechem and Chamor in jail and didn't put them in trial, so for that reason they violated the mitzvah of dinim, of having a court system. Yes, what's the problem? Oh, terrific. That's the question of the Maharal. Very good. That's the question of Maharal. According to Rambam, they are punished because they did not put Shechem and Chamor in trial. However, you're asking Mrs. Wolf a very good question, and that's the question of the Maharal, that how can you expect the residents to put their president, their king, their prime minister in trial, even in democratic countries, it's very hard to do so. So, kal vachomer.
In France.
Sorry?
In France.
That, yeah. Okay. He has a good time, huh? Right? He has a good time in France. He's talking about the French Revolution, he's saying. That's what he said. Yeah? Very good time, huh?
Outside the regular justice system also.
A king could do things which are not justice. I hear. Interesting. So the Maharal says it cannot be this reason why they were allowed to punish the entire city, because of course they cannot put them in trial, they cannot put them in prison, they cannot punish them. It's the king, they cannot do that. So he says the reason is something else. And he gives actually a general rule in the laws of war. And he says that this is the teva, the nature of battle between two nations. And he says that once you have two nations fighting with each other, so you are allowed to take revenge with anyone who is part of that nation. He says, please see the underlined Hebrew part in source number 8. He says, "Afal gav de lo asar kechad mehem, kevan de michlal ha'am hu, kevan sheparzu lem tchila, mutar likach nikmatam mehem." I think I'm missing your parts. I don't know what happened. Yeah. So, okay. Forgive me. So he says here that the reason is, since they're part of a nation, the nature of the war is that if one person from one nation is attacking your nation, you're allowed to pay revenge to the entire nation. It's very hard to understand this. It's very hard. It's just hard for us to accept this because we're also a nation. Seems to allow that as well. I agree. But Maharal says, and he concludes, v'chenem kol hamilchamot. This is the nature, says the Maharal, of every warfare. That when you have two nations, so what can you do? How to take care of your nation first? It's very hard to accept this. This is the Maharal. Yeah?
I think if a terrorist would say that they are an army, and they're fighting as an army, it would be okay. But they're not doing that. So we can't fight them because the world, they're outside the wall.
I hear, but in that case, it does justify terrorists. It's a very hard thing to accept.
But
yeah?
These people were not at war. They were offering to join, that they should join together. We don't want that, but they were not at war. They were offering peace. They were offering that the families should join one another. This was not what we wanted.
It's very hard. I'm not saying this is easy. This is very hard. This is very difficult. But the Maharal wants to give this general rule. Yeah. Sorry? That's the question which is raised here. It's very hard to accept this. I agree. But this is the Maharal trying to give some kind of justification why they did so. And he said, this is warfare. And since our enemies do this to us, so we do it as a... So, I agree. It's very hard. I would not want this to happen to us. But that is according to Maharal. So the Maharal wants to tell us that according to this story, we learn from here, I have to finish another 3 minutes. Oh my goodness. The Maharal says, according to this story, we could learn some kind of justification that since they're part of the general nation that started battle with us, so in that case we could do the same thing back to them. That's the Maharal. Nevertheless, I wanted to emphasize that although this Maharal seems to allow us to hurt the innocent civilians of our enemies, but please see that nevertheless, the Tanakh in numerous places says that still we have to be extra careful. Just for example, in source number 9, in Shmuel Aleph, Shaul is about to attack the Amalekim, and he says the innocent people who are among them, before he goes into battle, he does the first, what's called Noar Hakesh Bagag, the first knocking on the roof, telling them, leave this place, because we're going to attack the Amalekim. You are innocent people. We do not want to harm you. Please leave. So we still learn from here that there is, although there might be some justification according to Maharal to do it, But Tanakh teaches us we have to be extra careful. We have to do nolakesh bagag. We have to ask them in advance, please be aside because we're going to attack and you're going to be in danger. Please go away. We do see this in Tanakh. This is the morals and the ethics of the Jewish people, of the Torah, of the prophets. That this is a thing that we have to do. In addition, one final source, but in Divrei Amin, the famous pasuk that tells us about David the Melech that he cannot build Beit HaMikdash. So says the Navi in Divrei Amin in source number 10. Vayalai dvar Hashem lemor dam larov shafachta. You spilled many blood, much blood. Umilchamot gedolot asita, and you have conducted many battles. Lo tivne bayit lishmi. You cannot build a house for my sake. You cannot build Beit HaMikdash. Ki damim rabim shafachta arza lefanai. Because you spilled much blood in front of me. And says the Radak, and he has a very interesting observation, the Radak. The Radak says, on the spot, גם בדמי הגויים אשר שפח, אותם שלא היו בני מלחמתו, those who are part of the battle, who are against you, it's a no-brainer, it is okay, he was against you, he was trying to kill you, you could kill them. But what happened if you killed people who were not attacking you? שלא היו בני מלחמתו, that weren't part of the battle against you. אפשר שהיו בהם אנשים טובים וחסידים. It could be that among those people, you had very good, righteous and pious people. And says the Navi, Avar Pichen, Lo Ne'enash Alehim. David HaMelech was not punished because of that. He wasn't considered to be a murderer. He wouldn't be trialed as a murderer. Why? Ki kavanato lechalot ha-resha'im shelo yifmetsu b'Yisrael. Since the reason why he did so was in order to prevent our enemies to attack us, that's why it was fine for him to kill even the innocent. So again, he shouldn't have done so, but he won't be punished because of it, because again, since his intentions were good in order to wipe out the evil people, and he couldn't distinguish between the good and the bad, that's why it's fine. However, the Torah objects this and does not approve it, and because of that, he cannot build Beit HaMikdash. אבל כיוון שנזדמן לו שפיכות דמים לרוב, so he won't be punished and trialed as a murderer, David HaMelech, but since he spilled much blood, מנעהו מלבנות בית המקדש. He cannot build בית המקדש. Because the purpose of בית המקדש is שלום, peace, חפרת עוונות, place to ask forgiveness for Hashem, ולהתירה תפילה, to pray to Hashem, and like a person cannot use metal tools in order to build the Mishkan and Beit HaMikdash, because metal tools are also meant to build swords and other weapons, so the same reason, you spilled blood, and it was also innocent people, so that's why you cannot build Beit HaMikdash. So this is very complicated. So on the one hand, he won't be punished, because we can't criticize you, you tried to save yourself, you tried to save the Jewish people, and in the process, you might have hurt civilians. Nevertheless, you lost a certain level of spirituality, a certain madrega, and because of that, you cannot build Beit HaMikdash. I'll just conclude with one last thing, and this also relates to Hanukkah. So again, before I go to this idea, so we learn from here that there is certain justification in order to save the Jewish people, in order to reach the enemy. Yes, you can also sometimes hurt the innocent civilians, but nevertheless, Tanakh emphasizes in many places, you have to be extra careful not to take away innocent lives, as we see with King Shaul, as we see with King David. And that also should be the moral and ethics of the IDF, the most moral army in the Middle East. I'll just conclude with the Baruch Sheamar. This also ties up to Hanukkah. And he says that if you'll notice, in Hanukkah, we're going to bench in a moment, and in the benching we say Al Anisim, we see the miracle of the war. However, if you open the Gemara in Shabbos, which tells us, my Hanukkah, what is the miracle of Hanukkah? There is no mention of the war. We only mention the miracle of the oil, the miracle lit for 8 days. Why is it? Why is it that in the Gemara, in the Talmud, we don't see any mention of the war, but in mention we do see? So he says, the Baruch Sheamar, this is Rav Boruch Epstein, he was the son of Aruch HaShulchan, a major rabbi 120 years ago, he actually was a banker, and he says the reason is because those who learn Torah, those who come to Tanakh in a day, and they dedicate their time with the spirituality, with the Jewish heritage, so they know that the war is not the most important thing. The war is only means to get to an end. It's only something that usually we object. We don't like wars. We want peace. And what is the real message of Hanukkah? That Hashem does miracles to us. That we have a kesha with Him. We have a connection with Him. We have a relationship with Him. That is the message that we have to learn in Tanakh in a day. That wars are not a goal in Judaism, rather spirituality, chesed, and being kind to others, both in Israel and also beyond the Jewish people.